Hopefully by now you've caught on to the catchy slide up there, and you're already turning to 1 Corinthians chapter 3. I figured there was probably a better use of time than you all sitting here and watching me take my mask off as we've been doing for the last couple months. But this is our subject text for this evening here in 1 Corinthians chapter 3. So we're going to read verses 6 through 9, and then we're going to go ahead and make some applications. 1 Corinthians chapter 3 and verses 6 through 9. This is Paul speaking. He says, I planted, Apollos watered, but God was causing the growth. So neither the one who plants nor the one who waters is anything, but God who causes the growth. Now he who plants and he who waters are one, but each will receive his own reward according to his own labor. For we are God's fellow workers. You are God's field, God's building. So I think we all want to be a part of this. I know I want to be a part of a growing church, and I've got a feeling that everybody here does as well. And I know that for the purposes of this lesson here this evening, we're going to use the more general use of this word church, meaning a congregation. And so we all want to be a part of a productive, healthy, growing congregation of Christians. Just think of the benefits that a growing church has for you individually. I think your heavenly odds increase dramatically when you're a part of a growing church, because if we are, then we're going to have some people around us that are here to keep us in shape. The brethren are going to be there for us when we get a little bit out of line. They can get us back on track. That's a benefit of the growing church. We also have some better friend options when we're a part of a growing church. The question of who I'm going to spend my time with, and by extension, who I'm going to be influenced by, that's a much easier answer when you're a part of a growing church, because you're going to be surrounded by some very strong Christians. You can spend time with people who are like-minded. You don't or you shouldn't have to worry about them suggesting that maybe you do something or go somewhere where you know that you shouldn't. As a part of a growing church, you have the opportunity to be surrounded by disciples. I think that's huge. The growing church also has an impact on the community around it. The church, it can allow God to work through it in order to save souls. And so when we get this process right, we can influence people to put on Christ. And then they, in turn, they can influence the people that are in their lives to put on Christ as well. So when we do this right, there's a trickle-down effect. The growing church has community-wide impacts and really worldwide impacts as well. And so everyone benefits from the growing church, and I think that's why we all want to be a part of it. Well, the verses that we read in 1 Corinthians chapter 3, that's the plan to get there. There's no way to get to this growing church outside of what the Bible details there. Now, unfortunately, sometimes in striving to become this growing church, people start to maybe move away from the plan. They start adding things in to try to appeal to something other than the gospel. I think you see this a lot in the mega churches, where there's a basketball team or there's a choir that you can be a part of, and there's all of these other appeals that are not the gospel message. Now, these people, they are adding numbers to their congregations, hence mega church. But a growing church is not only increasing in number, but more importantly, it's a church that's headed in the right direction. It's growing closer to God. And so you need both of those aspects in order to be labeled as this growing church. But 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 6 through 9, that's the biblical model for church growth. And it's a model that's useful for all times. Just because it's 2021 and people seem to be moving further and further away from God, that doesn't mean that we need to deviate from the plan. In fact, I would actually argue that the tougher things get around us, the more we need to make sure we're sticking close to the plan. Because his ways are useful for all time. There isn't a time period that God just didn't account for. If it worked in Corinth, then it's going to work in Coleman as well. So here's what we need for church growth. It's pretty simple. We need planting, we need watering, and we need God as well. That's it. It says Paul planted, it says Apollos watered, and God gave the increase. And the result was a growing church in Corinth. Verse 9, it calls them God's building. Now, of course, the church in Corinth, it's not a perfect group. It's not a group that is without problems, but it is one that has all of the components necessary to grow into this building that God would have them to be. And that's what we want. So this is the model that we need. Now, we are a part of the planting and the watering part of this whole process. Planting, or talking to people about the word of God and the gospel and watering or helping people grow once that seed has been planted, those two aspects, those are on us. So we're going to need to make sure that we talk about how to do those things. But can we at least first agree that there is one aspect here of the growing church that is already taken care of? And I think that's God, right? Is there anyone here who thinks that God has a lack of desire or maybe a lack of ability to still cause growth in 2021? No, of course not. No one here would say that. God always holds up his end of the bargain, and this is going to be no different. So we can go ahead and just put a check next to him because we already have this aspect of the growing church. But my question is, what about the other two? What about planting and watering? Are we doing these things? Because if we aren't growing the way that we need to be, then we have to go ahead and do some self-reflection because we know God is already doing his part. We need to figure out how to fulfill our role in this process as best as we possibly can. We need to find a way to be able to put a check next to these other two categories as well. So what we're going to do is we're going to separate this into two different lessons. I don't know that you get really, really good or really strong at any of these things just overnight. So we're going to talk about planting today, and then a month from now, we're going to talk about watering. So for this month, let's be really intentional about really giving planting a go in our communities and the people that are around us. Because what we can't do is not plant for an entire month and then fold our hands and say, well, planting doesn't really work. Now, I do concede, and actually I would agree with the idea that some parts of this planting process are very, very difficult, and the people that we are talking to, obviously they have a role in it all as well, but if we're talking about planting, then we have got to give it a try, because if we don't plant at all, can we really be surprised if our churches don't grow? And if we don't plant properly, again, can we really be surprised if churches don't grow? So let's give it a month to key in on planting. I think this is going to give us a month to see how things actually play out. We'll be able to assess some things, and most importantly, we'll be able to give some feedback to one another. Because this is a we thing, so we all need to know if whatever methods we're trying, if they're actually useful or if they're helpful or not. Because planting is the overall process, and of course that can't change, but sometimes there are some methods and within that process that are more or less helpful depending on the situation. Paul, he seemed to have a method when he was planting. He went to the synagogue in every city that he went to. And I think that Philippi is the only place where we don't see him do that. So one of the best planters ever, he had a method that he used for planting. And I'm sure you all have some ideas as well. So share those ideas with me and others. And I've got one at the very, very end that I'm going to share myself because I think there are some easier and maybe more practical methods that we can use. But first, let's knock down some barriers or obstacles that may be preventing us from planting right now. Because I think most, if not all of us, already knew that we need to be planting before we got here. But there are some things that we let get in the way. And it's funny, I was talking to Jeff about this the other day, and we both agreed that we kind of make a lot of these things up in our heads as we go along. But if we can knock out some of these obstacles, then we should feel more free to plant moving forward. So let's tackle a few of them. Number one, maybe there have been some bad examples. Maybe you haven't been the best example when you're around others, and maybe that's what's causing you to not plant the way that you should be. I think we all recognize the power of a good example. Jesus says in Matthew chapter 5 and verse 16, "Let your light shine before men in such a way that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven." So when you do good and godly things around others, it presents an opportunity to bring glory to God. And so people are watching, and I think we all know that. So if we haven't been a good example around someone, sometimes it deters us from talking to them or inviting them. I think there's a certain shame that's involved with it. If we haven't been Christ-like or as Christ-like as we should, and then we try to talk to someone about Jesus, well, then it leaves us vulnerable, right? Someone at work could say, "Well, aren't you the guy who said this, or aren't you the person who did that?" And then it's awkward, and then it's kind of shameful. And I think this happens a lot with people who are in a relationship with a non-Christian, and maybe the relationship has gone to places where you know it shouldn't have. It's awkward and it's shameful to then turn around and try to talk to those people about Jesus. You feel and you look hypocritical. And so instead of possibly dealing with those awkward situations, we keep quiet and we shy away. Well, if you're in that position where you have been a bad example to someone, well, let's start by becoming a better example, because by being a better example moving forward, it does away with all of those problems, right? If you're doing better now, you're actually a good example of the kind of change that's going to be expected of them as well. So it's really another area that you could be letting your light shine. This is not a reason to stay away, but rather a reason to actually talk to people. And if they do make reference to things that you've done, it's going to be to past things. They're not calling you out for being a current hypocrite. They're just making references to areas from the past where you needed to grow. And I think we all have areas like that. And so again, all of that is provided that you are now being a good example. But you having been a poor example is not a reason to not plant the seed. Because if someone calls to things that you've done in the past, now is a chance for you to be like Paul in your mindset. Because Paul was a great planter and he did some terrible things in his past. Just check Acts chapter 7 and you'll see what Paul was up to before he became a planter. But then fast forward to 1 Timothy chapter 1 and verse 15, Paul says, "It is a trustworthy statement deserving of full acceptance that Christ Jesus came into the world to save sinners, among whom I am foremost of all." So by talking to people, even if you've been a bad example in the past, you have an opportunity to be like that, to humble yourself and say you've made mistakes, but that now you are committed to living a life for Christ and you want the person that you're talking to in order to do the same thing too. And interestingly enough, when you look at Paul's life, it seems like he was actually motivated by his past failures. He was driven by those things. He makes several references to his former status as a persecutor. But since he knew what he was saved from, he knew that this was something that he had to be talking about. And that needs to be our mindset. So even if you haven't been the best example in the past, that shouldn't hinder us from planting. Now, we will need to do better, but we still have a great chance to influence others and to plant the seed. Even in this situation, we've actually got some areas where we can use to our advantage in planting. So we should take advantage of them. A bad example should not be an obstacle to planting. Or maybe you just don't think people will listen, and that's why you don't plant the seed. I think that's another major, major reason. You can look back in Matthew chapter 13, which we had Carrie read for us. I think in the parable of the sower, we primarily turn to this passage to look at the different soils, as that really does seem to be where Jesus gives the most attention in his explanation. But he still does call it the parable of the sower in verse 18, so I want us to focus on what the sower is doing. Because he doesn't seem to be too concerned with where exactly the seed is going. If you look at verses 4 and 5, he threw some on the road, he threw some on the rocky soil, some in the thorns, and then of course some did actually make it onto the good soil. So by our wisdom, we would say that he wasted 75% of the seed. But even still, the sower still plants, even though the vast majority of the seed doesn't accomplish the desired result. The sower still has a job, and so he still plants. And so that needs to be our attitude too. We are planters. We can't try to determine someone else's soil. We have to allow them to do that. We've got to just keep on planting. And even if we don't think it's going to get the desired result, we still have a job to do. And truly enough, we don't really know what kind of soil this person really is. We're not qualified to make that statement. So by casting them off as someone who won't obey, we're assuming a role that we don't have the authority or the ability to have and to complete. Our job is to plant. That's something that we can actually do. Now here's why it's dangerous to just write people off. What if I've deemed that someone won't listen to the gospel? Number one, I've completely let myself off the hook because now I feel justified in not talking to them and not fulfilling Jesus' command in Matthew chapter 28 and verse 19, where he says that we are to make disciples of all the nations. So now I found a way around doing what Jesus commands me to do. And I think we're usually pretty good at that. But also, we've tried to determine the other person's salvation as well. We've said that they won't obey before we've even given them a chance. We actually put ourselves in between them and salvation. We're giving ourselves way too much power there. And if you're hindering salvation for people, I think that's being in direct conflict with God wanting all men to be saved. We have to let people determine their own soil. Even if we don't think that they'll listen, that's really not a good reason to not plant the seed. Everyone is an eligible candidate. The people who don't look like us, they need to hear about Jesus. The people that don't come from the same background as us, they need to hear about Jesus. Even the people who don't vote the same way that we do, they need to hear about Jesus. Because we're planters. Now, if someone has demonstrated that they will not hear the gospel and they will not hear things about Jesus, then we can kick the dust off of our feet and we can go to the next person. But we have to allow them to make that decision. I don't think they'll listen is not a valid obstacle. Or maybe we're just anticipating the repercussions of talking to someone about Christ. Macy actually brought this one up to me the other day, and Jared kind of touched on this a little bit this morning too. I think this one factors in for a lot of people. We assume that there's going to be some kind of horrible reaction to us when we talk to people about Christ. We think we might lose a friend or a family member or even worse. Maybe you got it in your head that your reputation is going to take a hit. No one wants to be labeled as weird. We think that talking to someone about Jesus is going to make us weird in the eyes of the people that we're talking to. But I think it's the King James Version that renders 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 9 a peculiar people. Well, that's just another word for weird. That's another word for being different. Just by the nature of you being a Christian, you are going to be different than people, and you should be. That's what you signed up for. So if we are really serious about being a saint, being someone who is set aside for God's purposes, then we really shouldn't shy away from being different, should we? That should actually be something that compels us to talk to others and highlight those differences, because those differences are the only things that actually make us valuable. Being useful to God and for His purposes, that's how you really establish value in yourself. So by not talking to others about Jesus, you might lose some value in the people that you're talking to. But if you're talking to others about Jesus, who are you gaining value with? You're gaining value with God. If we are planters, that means we are valuable to God. And I think that's what's most important. By opening your mouth and talking about Christ, you are proving yourself to be useful to God, and that's all that really matters. And let's be honest, are our friends really just going to sever ties with us because we're talking about Jesus? Probably not. The fear of losing friends is mostly unfounded. In fact, most people, especially around here, they actually value someone who has some spirituality about them. And if they do sever ties completely with you, is this really someone that we should have been super close to in the first place? This is a tough one because, like Jared said this morning, we need friends and companionship. That's kind of how we're programmed, but we can't let the desire for our friends or for reputation keep us from doing what we are supposed to do. And young people, and I hesitated to even say that. I don't even know if I'm allowed to say young people, but I'll say younger than me people, don't get sucked into this trap. Talk to your friends about Jesus. Talk to your friends about church. I understand that people at that age can be a little more cruel than when you get older, so I don't want to just dismiss that. But please don't let that deter you. Talk to people about Christ. Plant the seed. We need people in this age group to be planting just as much as any of the others. And in fact, you have just as much of a responsibility as any of the other groups. All of us need to do a better job of not getting wrapped up in focusing on how much we might have to lose by talking about Jesus. Instead, let's focus on how much we have to gain, which is value with God. So let's not use the repercussions as obstacles for planting. So since we've tackled some of these hindrances or some of these obstacles, I think that means that we can move forward, right? Now, while none of these concerns are unfounded or made up, we also understand that they can't keep us from doing what we are supposed to do, which is to be a part of this planting process. Now, thankfully, you don't have to be a scholar or know every single cross reference from Isaiah to the Gospels in order to chip in. You know, not everyone is a planter, or should I say, not everyone feels like they're a planter, even though many, many of you are. And I know this because I've spent time around you. I've heard your comments in Bible class. You all know your stuff. But the first thing that we can do in order to be a part of this planting process is just simply through invitations. It's through inviting people to worship and to gatherings where church folks are. You know, invitations are a huge part of this process. And this is something that anyone here can do. It's as simple as, hey, would you like to come to worship with me? Or Or, hey, what are you doing this Saturday? Me and so-and-so from church are going to go do something. It's simple. And you're already around people all the time at work or at the gym or wherever. So use just a little bit of that time to be a part of this planting process. Now, I know it can be nerve-wracking to talk to people about salvation. If you understand the severity of it all, I would expect you to feel something there. But how about just inviting someone to services? You invite people places all the time, so just treat it like that. Now, this is not seed planting, and I don't want us to get confused there. The seed is planted when the gospel is spoken to someone. There in Matthew 13, in the parable of the sower, Jesus says it's when you hear the word of the kingdom. So the word of the kingdom isn't just come to services. But these invitations are a crucial part of the entire process. Just think of them as opportunities for seed planting. By having them with you in one of these situations, you have presented an opportunity for someone to plant the seed. You have joined into the process. Now, at worship, it's obvious who could take advantage of this opportunity. We have three evangelists and we have two elders. And I hope it's not too blunt, but that's our job. Our job is to take care of those things. Those tough conversations about salvation and maybe some of the tough things that someone might have to give up in order to serve Jesus moving forward, we are equipped for those kinds of conversations. So by bringing them to worship, you have created an opportunity for them to hear the gospel. That's a big deal. That's why it is the first step in the process. And that's why it even works in inviting them to get-togethers with church members, because you have some planters in your friends' groups as well. You know, there's value in them being around Christ-like people, and assuming that they're acting like Christ, of course, but I believe you specifically have people in your friend circles who can have a conversation with someone and tell them their current situation and what they need to do to be saved. Now, it might be Jeff, it might be Brad, it might be somebody else that's in your friend circle. Regardless of who it is, when they're around Christians, we have an opportunity to plant the seed. And that's valuable. That's why these opportunities are valuable. Now, we do need to make sure that we keep the focus on planting the seed, because if we're getting them to worship or to different gatherings and the seed is not being planted, then that means we're going to need to get after it. We're going to need to focus back in. Now, if it's a worship thing and you don't know for a fact that someone has been planting the seed, I won't have a problem with you coming up to me and bring it to my attention and say, hey, this person has been here for however long and we need to have a conversation with them. I know Mr. Jim, Mr. Tim, and Jared are right there with me on that. This is a group process, so if you've done your part and you've gotten them to around planters and no one is planting, then maybe you just need to have a conversation with someone and mention those things to them. But get people around opportunities for planting. That's why invitations are important. That's why they are critical. And that's why it's the first thing that anyone here can do in order to be a part of this process. And the next thing we can do is through training. You can do this by sitting in on planting opportunities. There are some who want to plant, but maybe they just feel inadequate or they feel they're not prepared to. Again, I think you're selling yourself short a little bit, but if you do feel like you need some work before you talk to someone, by sitting in, you can pick up on things that get you to where you need to be in order to be a planter. Now, just think about it. If the goal is to plant more seed, then the more confident planters we have, the better. Think of it as planting in an actual garden. If we had 10 people planting, then I would say we would be able to get a lot done. But what if we had 25 people planting? We would get more planted. It's the exact same way with the gospel. If we had 10 people who were ready to talk to people about salvation, we could do some good things. But imagine if we had 25, or if we had 50, or if we had 100. It's simple math. The more planters, then the more planting. The only way to get more planters, though, is by equipping ourselves with the skills to be able to plant properly and confidently. So if you aren't confident in your ability to plant, then learn how. Sit with someone and get confident. If you brought someone to services or you just know of someone else who's trying to plant the seed, ask to sit in on that conversation. Especially if it's someone that you already know, the likelihood of them saying, no, you can't be a part of that is pretty low. And then you would learn things and you would eventually get to the point where you could plant too. overall, the goal is to plant more seed. So anything that we can do in order to create more opportunities for that, or anything that we can do in order to have more people able and available to do that, we should all be willing to get involved with that process. We need more confident planters. Adding just you to the list of planters that we have available, it increases those chances tremendously. So if you don't feel like a planter, ask for some training. That's how you can join into this process. And then let's make sure that we're actually planting the seed and make sure that we are planting it properly. That's what this point is all centered around. If you're taking notes, maybe proper planting is what you need to write down here. Again, the seed is the gospel. And many of us are confident in our abilities to plant the seed and spread the gospel. And then, of course, some of us are working our way to that as well. But when we do plant, we have to make sure that it is the gospel and the entire contents of the gospel. So don't water the message down. Don't leave parts of the gospel out. When we're talking about the gospel, we have to prepare people for the life that they will live after baptism. Remember, the goal isn't to just make a Christian, but healthy, productive disciples. So if I'm planting the seed and I tell people about their sin and about salvation, but I don't tell them about how their life moving forward is about service to Jesus, what good does that do for our overall goal of healthy disciples? Is the result of that really going to be a healthy Christian? If someone doesn't understand their responsibilities as a disciple moving forward, what's going to happen when trouble arises, maybe in their own personal life? Think back to the parable of the sower. A Christian who doesn't understand what's expected of them and flees as soon as bad things happen, that's the rocky soil. And our improper planting helped them get to that point. Or if we don't prepare people for all of the good things that they're going to be required of them moving forward, or the change in character that is expected of them, how does that factor into us creating healthy disciples if we don't tell them about these things? That seems like the thorny soil. When the going gets tough, they're not going to have any fruit. Of course, people make their own decisions, but we can lead people to becoming fruitless Christians when we don't plant properly. We need to give people the whole gospel when we're planting the gospel message. Tell them the good things, but tell them the tough things as well. Jesus was the best planter to ever live. And do you know the things that he was saying when he was planting the seed? He was saying, take up your cross. He was saying that Christianity could put you against your family. He was saying that you would have to follow him from that point moving forward. Now, through our wisdom, we might conclude that we should leave some of that stuff out so that we can get them on board first. But Jesus doesn't seem to think that way. He said the tough things. And why? Because that's the gospel message. The gospel message is that man has sinned, God has provided a way of redemption, and moving forward, man's life belongs to him. So we need to make sure that we are covering all parts of the gospel when we're planting the seed. We need to make sure we are preparing people for a life of service to Christ, because that's the only way that a healthy disciple is possible. And that's what this entire process is all about. So, of course, I've got a challenge, because if we leave here tonight and we don't actually do anything different, if we don't actually try anything, then all of this was just kind of a waste. So write this down or have some way of making sure that you're going to remember this. This is something that everyone here can do. And even if you don't think that you're a planter, you can do this, because this is focused on creating these planting opportunities. Number one, identify 4 people in your life to invite either to services or to one of those get-togethers that we talked about earlier. Make it someone that you interact with on a regular basis already. This is valuable because you are already talking with these people on a normal basis. And a lot of these people you already have an influence on. Now, you don't have to have a deep relationship with someone in order to talk to them about Christ. But there are some hurdles that are already cleared when you do have an existing relationship with them. You know, if you talk with them normally already, you don't have to wonder how you're going to start the conversation, or you're not going to have to overcome any of those psychological barriers that we put up when we're talking to strangers. In fact, since this is already someone that you talk with normally, you have more opportunities to talk with them about coming with you. All you have to do is exchange one conversation about politics or sports with a conversation about worship. Also, the odds of talking with just these 4 people is that an extremely adverse or cruel reaction is a much lower possibility. Because you already know these people, and they know you. They've got a reason to not respond ugly because they want to remain on good terms with you as well. Remember that fear that we talked about earlier about not wanting a loss of position or for a loss of people or for people to think that we're crazy? That is even a significantly less of an option if we're inviting people that we already interact with. So invite four people, and with those four people, we're going to invite a different person each week. So you've got 4 weeks in a month, so each person gets an individual invitation. You also have four extra Sundays, and that you can assign all of those to a different person too. So all total, you will be inviting each person 13 times in a year. Now, none of that is strenuous, right? That's not strenuous on the person asking or on the person being asked. But 13 times is a lot of opportunities for planting the seed. And if you don't think so, I just want you to compare 13 to how many times you invited someone in all of 2019 and 2020 combined. This is a ton of opportunities, and because it's not super strenuous, it leaves the door open for future invitations as well. So four people, one invitation per week, and we can do this. Now, I will say, be careful about inviting people to the gatherings instead of worship. Because at worship, we have some people on hand whose job it is to seize those opportunities. If it's a gathering, then you need to communicate with the others there that there is a planting opportunity that is present, and we need to make sure that we're following through with those. Because of course, anybody can hang out, but we're looking to become a growing church. And of course, we're going to need to stay committed to this. We need effort from everyone. The more people we have involved with this, then the more opportunity for success. And the better we stick to the plan, the more opportunity for success. And so we all need to make sure that we stay committed. If we get it right this month and then the next month, but not the month after that, then we've now hindered our success rate. So instead of it becoming 13 invitations, now it's 12 and 11 and so on and so forth. So we all individually need to stay locked in. Planting is a disciple responsibility. So if you're a disciple, then you need to be a part of this process. And challenge others to be a part of it as well and to be involved and stay committed. Because again, the more people we have involved, the better. We had 130-something people here last week, and I'll take away 30 for visitor inflation there. But if we just had 100 people inviting one person a week, I know that we would see results. Now, regardless of where we are or what our role here is in this process, we can do something, and we should want to do something. Because you know about the key to salvation and a right standing with the Creator of the universe. Why would we want to keep that to ourselves? You talk about things that you have deemed valuable. There is nothing more valuable than salvation. So we should have a pull in us to want to tell people about Jesus if we've deemed him valuable. So let's get after it. Let's take this month to kind of recalibrate and get really, really focused on planting. Now, the beauty of all of this is that when we stick to God's plan on it, it actually helps take care of itself. When you plant correctly, those people end up becoming planters themselves, and they get to the point where they are contributing to the process too. A growing church actually helps itself grow. Think of how many people in Scripture converted their own household. The seed was planted for Lydia in Acts chapter 16, and then she went and planted to her entire household. I think this is a good example of not needing to know everything in order to become a planter, but you can see that when you plant right, people start contributing, and that's how we grow as a church. So God's way still works. If we want to get this right and become this growing church, then we know what we have to do. So if you haven't put Christ on in baptism, now is the time. This is the seed being planted with you. You have sinned and you have transgressed God's law, but thankfully he sent his son to die for our sins. And this brought the possibility of redemption to God through the blood of his son Jesus. Well, you come into contact with that blood through baptism. And the only way to receive the remission of sins and to be in a right standing with God is through baptism. But of course, that's not the end. After that, your life belongs to him. You are a follower of Jesus moving forward. The good thing, though, is that by following him, it leads us to heaven with the Father. So be baptized today. Have those sins washed away tonight. If you have any more questions, we have so many people who would love to have those conversations with you. Again, that's what we're here for. But maybe you've already been baptized, but you just haven't been faithful. You can make that right tonight with God as well. Repent of your sins. Commit to doing better. Rededicate your life to Christ. We want to pray for you. We want to pray with you. We want to help in any way that we possibly can. If you have any needs, please make them known now as we stand and as we sing.